We're going to begin with breaking news out of the U.S., where President Joe Biden's announced the killing of Abu Ibrahim al-Hashimi al-Qureshi, the leader of ISIL, by American special forces in Syria. In a statement, Joe Biden says, "Last night, at my direction, U.S. military forces in the northwest of Syria successfully undertook a counter-terrorism operation to protect the American people and our allies and make the world a safer place. Thanks to the skill and bravery of our armed forces, we have taken off the battlefield Abu Ibrahim al-Hashimi al-Qureshi, the leader of ISIS. All Americans have returned safely from the operation." Well, Sinem Kossiol is standing by in Istanbul. First, let's bring in our White House correspondent, Kimberly Halkett. Kimberly, the White House obviously very pleased with this operation, but there are going to be some questions to be asked.
Yeah, the White House characterizing this as a successful operation, and notable in the president's statement that he released is that all of the U.S. special forces that were involved in this operation returned back safely. But the same cannot be said for the civilians on the ground. We know that there are at least more than a dozen casualties, and among them children. And so that is of grave concern to many who have been watching this, waking up to this news in the United States, given the fact that this is a bit of a surprise on a number of counts. Not only the fact that there are still U.S. operations in Syria, which many will be unfamiliar with, but also the fact that the United States was not more careful, more surgical in this operation and allowing it to be more precise and preventing these civilian deaths. So this is something that the U.S. military will have to explain, but it's also something that the U.S. president will have to explain why he's continued this Trump-era policy. Donald Trump, his predecessor, saying that most of the U.S. troops were out of Syria, but as the commander-in-chief, Joe Biden, obviously carrying on some of those policies, keeping those troops in place, even if in a very small number. He'll have to explain why that is, why he decided to take out the ISIL leader now, and at the same time risk innocent lives. And so we're expecting that statement from the U.S. president. He will be speaking from the Roosevelt Room of the White House. We expect that to happen at the bottom of the hour. In the interim, already the White House has released on social media a photograph of the national security team, which includes the Vice President Kamala Harris, sitting alongside Joe Biden as they watch this operation be conducted in what we suspect is the secure location of the White House where these types of operations are observed. That is now public. Again, a little bit not unusual for these types of photographs to be released, but again, hardly a reason for celebration, given the fact that there are casualties. They do include children, although the White House claiming this is a victory, the fact that an ISIL leader has been killed in this operation.
Yeah, as you say, Kimberly, those criticisms about additional casualties when attacks like this are carried out are often leveled at the U.S., particularly in relation to drone attacks. This one, as we understand it, and of course, information is fairly scant at the moment, seems to have involved helicopters and troops on the ground. The helicopters, we believe, broadcasting some sort of message in Arabic to people to evacuate the house before any action took place. The suggestion might be that this is at least some attempt by the U.S. to try to minimize those casualties. But as you say, in this case, it's not really worked.
Well, and human rights activists would take issue with that and argue that, you know, how much can a child be expected to comprehend the notices that are given by military professionals? As a mother, I can tell you that this is something, this is a very tall expectation of a young child. And so it really begs the question of just how prepared one can expect a child to be. And so these are the criticisms, legitimate ones at that. And so we do know that these are questions the military is going to have to answer. In fact, we expect that the head of CENTCOM, we understand, and this is subject to change, but the head of CENTCOM is expected to be in the United States, potentially in Washington, on Friday. And whether or not his schedule will include a public briefing is still open to question. But we're certainly watching to see if there will be further briefings and updates from the Pentagon where there can be some clarity about why this was not more skillfully conducted to avoid these civilian casualties, given the fact that we know that innocent lives were lost.
Kimberly, given your experience of watching how both sides of the houses are going to have been dealing with these situations in the past, is there any way of speculating what kind of reaction senators and congresspeople are going to have in response to this news?
Well, what we're seeing increasingly is a younger, more diverse population on Capitol Hill. We're seeing sort of the traditional, older, hawkish type, typically conservative, but not always, members of Congress who would, in the past 20 years, be supportive of what we know as the military-industrial complex, or the American war machine, not getting the same sort of support that they would have in the past. And so it's likely that there is going to be a strong chorus of criticism about this attack coming from some of the younger members of Congress. Springing to mind will be some of the young Democratic members like Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, or even Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from the state of New York, who have been very vocal and critical about some of the American apparatus overseas in these foreign conflicts that so often disproportionately cost human lives. And so I don't think that we're going to see as much support on Capitol Hill, and we're certainly not going to see it from the younger, more diverse voting public that has, in the case of even my own son, in his who's 20 years old, knows nothing but conflict and was born 10 days after 9/11 and knows a generation of war. There simply isn't the support that there was 20 years ago and the tolerance that there was 20 years ago for this ongoing conflict. And so one more point of cynicism that you see increasingly here in the United States is when the economy is bad, there's often this argument that governments like to create a war to get the economy going again. I'm not suggesting this, but certainly you will see that on social media as a means of injecting vigor into the economy, creating jobs. Certainly that has been a criticism of the military-industrial complex for longer than 20 years. And certainly you will see that raised again, given the fact that this is a struggling administration that is facing challenges with inflation right now.
That's our White House correspondent, Kimberly Halkett. Kimberly, as always, thank you very much. Let's go to Sinem Kosyolu, who's live for us in Istanbul. Sinem, what more are you hearing about what happened in Syria?
Well, Rob, actually, there are information coming which are conflicting each other in a way, because at first we thought the house of the Abu Ibrahim al-Qureshi was actually destroyed during the by the U.S. operation. But there are some newspapers reporting that Abu Ibrahim al-Qureshi blew himself up as the operation started. Also, some locals are saying the same thing. But what we know about the casualties is that those 13 civilians who were killed during this operation, six of them are children, four of them are women, and three of them are men. Some suggest that those women, some of them were wives of Abu Ibrahim al-Qureshi. But of course, we need to wait for confirmed information coming from Idlib and coming from the United States sides as well. Before the operation, we know that the U.S. military, the U.S. Officials actually coordinated with the Turkish side, informing them about the counterterrorism operation that they would be conducting. So Turks were also aware aware of the operation, but we don't know any information whether the Turks or any Turkish drones, in terms of reconnaissance, were involved during this operation. What is interesting for the Turkish side is that the location of Abu al-Qureshi's house was just between 3 to 5 kilometers deep from the Turkish-Syria border, from Antakya city of Turkey. And Baghdadi, the former leader of ISIL, again, was killed through such a similar operation by the United States Special Forces in 2019. And that location was also close to the Turkish border. So So far, we don't have any statements by the Turkish side, any official statements suggesting that they were aware from aware of this operation. But many experts on the Turkish national televisions have already started to discuss the possible implications of such an operation by the Turkish border, because it creates another national security issue for Turkey in terms of possible civilian influx to the borders, in terms of the fighter groups that are listed as terrorists by the United States coming close by the Turkish border. These are all questions that are being discussed on the Turkish media right now.
Yeah, Sinem, one can imagine that the countries neighboring Syria are going to be watching this very carefully to see what kind of response there might be from ISIL within Syria. Is there any indication, and I know it's very early, but is there any indication of any rising of tension within Syria, how groups might respond?
I have been following the news as they broke. People are curious because many in Turkey, in terms of military experts, they expect a response by ISIL towards either some of the groups that are close to the United States or moderate with the United States, or the PKK. PYD, let me say, the Syrian Kurdish fighter group. And Turks have been suggesting that Turkey is the only country in reality on the ground fighting with ISIL. But since the Turkish president is in Ukraine right now, having talks with the Ukrainian president about the tension by Ukraine-Russia border, it's been quiet in Ankara right now. But of course, we know that the ISIL group has been fragmented, and there are other groups inside Idlib. There have been operations by the U.S. against Horas Ettin and some other groups as well. We will need to watch and see what kind of reactions will come from those groups. But I have to say that those people that I have spoken in Idlib, they are terrified, because Atma is a very dense area just by the Turkish border. Hundreds of thousands of civilians are living there. Most of them have been already displaced during this Syrian civil war. And there are nearly 3.5 million civilians residing inside Idlib region. So these kinds of operations in some way is relieving, but on the other side, this is also a threat for the civilians, because now they know that some cells can find refuge among themselves, and they can be targeted collaterally during counterterrorism operations. And this is very close to the Turkish border, which also carries a risk of another refugee influx, as I said before. Mm.
Sinem, thanks very much indeed. Sinem Kosyolu talking to us from Istanbul. I want to bring in Michael Prigent. He's a senior Middle East analyst at Hudson Institute. He's a former U.S. intelligence officer. He's joining us by Skype from Washington, D.C. Thanks very much indeed for being with us on Al Jazeera. How is this likely to affect the operations of ISIL?
Well, I think it's a significant strike. We see leadership degradation. After Baghdadi was killed, most people didn't even know who Karachi was. Nobody has really been able to, you know, if you ask someone who's the leader of ISIS, they wouldn't be able to tell you. They'll be able to tell you today because he's dead. But as far as ISIS operations, they're still alive. They're still capable of conducting cross-border operations into Iraq and also have a presence in Syria. So they're looking for a new leader, and anytime a terrorist organization is looking for a new leader, it's an opportunity for intelligence services to find out and monitor that. And the proximity to the Turkish border, we would expect Turkish intelligence to know who that leader is going to be. We would have expected Turkish intelligence to know where Karachi was, because this is the same area where Baghdadi was killed, in close proximity, about 20 kilometers away. So this is an opportunity for intelligence services to be able to look at the competition for leadership in ISIS. That always creates an opportunity to target more leaders. But I think there'll be degradation initially with ISIS, much like we saw after Baghdadi's death.
Mm. The element of intelligence is interesting because if, as you say, this is an opportunity for intelligence services to start getting the lie of the land and who's involved and so on, one would imagine that they were able to do that when Abu Ibrahim al-Hashimi al-Qureshi was originally being put into place. But if I understand you correctly, it was only when he eventually materialized on the scene that people realized who he was and that he was actually the successor. So is there the intelligence that effort actually going to be able to achieve anything, given that it wasn't really successful the last time?
Well, you know, intelligence failures happen when we don't have boots on the ground. I mean, the best way to have intel is to be out there talking to people. And the United States just doesn't have that presence or that language capability to do that. Our Turkish allies do. They have relationships with the groups in the area. This is an area where, you know, Jelani works, you know, the leader of the Nusra Front. They changed their name, Tariq al-Sham, whatever they call themselves now. It's an opportunity for those countries that are concerned about ISIS and ISIS resurgence to get in there and establish their human intelligence networks and find out who the next leaders are. Right now in the U.S. intelligence community, they're probably ranking four successors and watching the competition. And the Iraqi government, they have a good intel network. They'll be able to help us with that and should be able to give us some clarity. But as far as the strike itself, if I could talk to the civilian casualties, let me know if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about that. I want to talk about the structure of ISIL in a moment, but let's talk about the strike itself. Given the fact that the strike was, to a certain degree, different to previous strikes that we've seen, predominantly the previous strikes have been carried out by drones. This one was carried out by helicopters carrying troops into Syria. Why do you think that was, and why do you think that this particular targeting warranted that action?
I think the intent was to capture Karaj. Let me just drink some water real quick here. The intent of the operation was to capture Karaj. There were people on the ground for an hour communicating with people inside the house, to include Karaj, telling them to let the children and the women out. They wanted to capture him. He did not let the women and children out. And the reason I say capture is you have to remember that Vice President Biden was against the Abbottabad raid that that was designed to kill or capture Osama bin Laden. He was against that. So this is his opportunity to do a redo, to do it right this time. And right would have been great. This would have been a great opportunity for the White House if they would have been able to capture him, to be able to say we've captured the ISIS leader. And if you can't capture, of course, you kill. But there was an attempt to get the people out. Karachi didn't let that happen. Some reports say he blew himself up. Others say that because he didn't come out, that the United States just destroyed the building. We don't know yet. We'll find out. But this was a redo. This was Biden's attempt to redo Abbottabad, because he's been criticized so much in the United States for being against the raid that killed Osama bin Laden. This is an attempt to fix what happened in Afghanistan with that absolute failure of a strike on that civilian vehicle that killed civilians. This is an attempted redo. Now, again, the United States will always weigh civilian casualties if they know, in fact, that the target is in the house. And if we can confirm that Karachi was there, then it's going to be a strike that the United States will always say yes to, unfortunately.
How do you think this is going to play out with Congress and senators and with the American public?
Well, because they killed Karachi and because he's the ISIS leader, unfortunately, a lot of those young, diverse members of Congress, I guess I qualify as one of those old hawkish conservative types, they'll have to tell them who Karachi was. I mean, they didn't know he was the ISIS leader. They didn't know his name. They will now. But because Karachi was killed, there will not be outrage. There's not going to be any outrage about the civilian casualties. I've been asked on other programs this morning, you know, what about the civilian casualties? And my advice to women is don't marry a terrorist.
I just want to ask you very briefly one final question about the structure of ISIL, because the immediate comparison that those of us outside the business, if you like, make is between ISIL and the structure of al-Qaeda. Now, as I understand it, al-Qaeda is a very fragmented organization. To some degree, ISIL is as well, but in a slightly different way. And just very briefly, just for the benefit of our audience, and in terms of the creation of a successor, can you just give us an idea what that structure is?
So senior al-Qaeda leadership ensured that everybody who joined the organization was a professional, understood Islam, understood what the tenets of al-Qaeda were. ISIS was different. They would just take anybody. So that's the ranks. So the leadership is cultivated, but the leadership believes it should be an Iraqi leader. And that's been one of the biggest conflicts within the organization, as they continue to say that the leader of ISIS should be an Iraqi. And that's a lot of competition with other jihadists who believe that they should be the leader, regardless of their status, where they're from.
Mm. Michael Pregent, it's really good to get your thoughts on this, and we appreciate you being with us on Al Jazeera. So thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.